The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
My name is Elbert Lewis Jr.
And I'm Alan McIntyre. And together we welcome you back to our show, Black on Black Commentary. And the intended audience for our show is the black community, yet others are encouraged and welcome to tune in. Each and every one of us has a unique bias when it comes to change or certain subjects. And I should warn you that the content of our program episodes is probably unlike anything you've heard coming out of the black community.
Again, I'd like to welcome you back and encourage you to keep an open mind and think for yourself. If you're not African American, we hope you'll listen in to our show as well. Our program is intended to educate our listeners and provoke serious thought. Each of our episodes will deal with a different topic of importance. Are you ready for some open and honest black on black commentary? Great, because it's time we talked.
Elbert, last time we spoke, I briefly mentioned Ferguson, Missouri. And I happened to be coming through Ferguson out there around about that time, during that time when all this was unfolding. I was coming back from Kansas.
You weren't one of those out-of-town agitators, were you?
No, I wasn't one of those people.
I knew better. I was just checking, though.
But I was wanting to know exactly, what do you think about the whole Ferguson, Missouri situation?
Man, number one, I think it could have been avoided. Let me tell you something about something that happened in my life. When I was in high school, 17 years old, right? I was rushing home because I had a job at the post office. They had this program where they had, if you're a pretty good student, they have you working part-time at the post office. I was coming down the hill, and the sidewalks was just crowded with students. And there was a couple of bridges. And I didn't want to get in that crowd of students on the bridge, so I went down steps and jaywalked across. And I was headed towards the other bridge, and I heard this sound behind me. And it kind of startled me, and I just took off running. I looked behind me, and it was a motorcycle cop. And for some reason, I just kept running. And he said, stop or I'll run your ass over. I didn't stop. I kicked it into third gear. I kept running, got to the second bridge, started weaving through these students, and I lost him. And got across the second bridge over the expressway, and I was going to make this turn off the sidewalk down through this factory, which was a shortcut down a dump road and then home. And I was running so fast, couldn't make the turn. I failed, skin up both my knees, hurt my arm. My books went flying, but I kept going. Ran through this factory, and there was a cop car, maybe a half a block away. He hit the lights, and I just stopped. I said, they got me. 2 minutes later, that motorcycle cop pulled up. And he was livid. He was red. He was angry. He was homicidal. And I believe to this day that if that motorcycle cop would have got to me first, he probably would have beat the hell out of me. He was just that mad. He was so angry. But then he had witnesses there. They put me in the car, took me to the station. And this sergeant came in, asked me what was I doing. I explained to him I was trying to hurry home, get something to eat, catch a bus, get down to the post office. You know, they wound up letting me go. Mm-hmm. Didn't give me a ticket for jaywalking. Didn't do anything. They were laughing. Not only were they laughing, it took me the rest of my junior year and half of my senior year to live that down. People were calling me Jesse Owens, asking me why I wasn't on the track team. But because I ran, I kind of instigated that whole scenario. And I think that's what happened in Ferguson. This guy in a store, strong-arming the owner, taking something that wasn't his. Instead of him being cool with it, low-key, him and his buddy going to walk down the middle of the street. And a cop goes by, and sees them and say, naturally you're going to say, get out of the street. This is for traffic. People have been hit and killed jaywalking the street. And the cop pulled away, and they're still walking down the street. And the cop came back, and then that whole situation happened. Nobody knows what happened besides, except the cop and I guess the two witnesses. But I'm just saying that whole incident could have been avoided. Mm-hmm. If they would have listened to the cop, got out of the street, onto the sidewalk, that whole incident would never have happened.
How about if he had, when he gotten up that day, and when he went to that store, he just made the decision not to strong arm?
But see, the cop didn't know that.
No.
All the cop did was tell him to get out of the street, which is what any cop would have done.
Well, no, I understand
you're
that.
You're walking in the middle of the street, so.
Right, no. But what I'm saying is, if I'm going to count to 10, I start at 1, not 2. So I got to go back to number 1. Number 1, had they not strong-armed that guy and robbed him, had that not happened, I don't think all of that wouldn't have unfolded.
Yeah, because I think he would have been a different frame of mind, because I think he might have thought that.
Well, he was in a rebellious frame of mind, obviously.
That cop came back.
Right.
Maybe he heard about the robbery.
And he wouldn't have to have wondered, well, does he know about the robbery?
Exactly.
But he was in the wrong frame of mind when he went there to strong arm, so he's already in a rebellious frame of mind. Yeah, thug mode.
There's no doubt.
So when the cop was get out of the street.
Right, he's robbing the store, walking down the street like he shouldn't have been.
Like he owned it.
Disobeying the cop when the cops give you a lawful instruction to get out of the damn street.
Right.
So he was definitely in thug mode.
But you know, in the black community, that's a very popular and common thing to do, is walk in the middle of the street and impede traffic and do all those things in spite of the fact that you know this is a bunch of damn foolishness.
And it's also popular to defy the man,
right,
and show the white cop you're not afraid of him. And I think they instigated the whole thing. Now, was the cop blameless? I don't know.
Well, my man, you know, you say the man, and I used to tell kids back when I was younger, and the way I thought was, why in the hell would you say the man? And people say, what are you talking about? He's the man. Well, then what are you? If he's a man, what are you? The boy?
Really?
So I never had a problem. You know, I didn't see him as a man because I saw myself as the man. You know, and so you're just another man. You know, mm-hmm. So I didn't have that, necessarily have that mindset. So, you know, it's a totally different thing to me.
Well, from what I know of that whole scenario, I think there was a blame on both sides. Number one, a couple of kids walking in the street is not that serious a thing to instigate a gunfight. And also, if you just robbed a place, it seems to me you want to be kind of low-key,
right,
and not attracting attention to yourself by walking down the middle of the damn street.
But don't you think that the fact that he had just robbed that place kind of supports and strongly suggests that he did actually tussle with that cop over his gun?
I think there's something to be said for that. He was definitely in thug mode, and he was definitely rebellious. So, yeah, could be.
Well,
it could have spilled over to that altercation with the cop, and he figured, well, you know, I'm Big Mike, and you know, who's going to tell me what the hell to do?
Well, you're a black guy, so let me ask you this. Let's say you were that cop in Ferguson,
mm-hmm.
and let's say that the circumstances were such that this guy began to wrestle with you over your weapon. And in doing that, he attempted to shoot you, and he discharged a weapon towards you inside the car. And fortunately, he missed you. What are you thinking after that?
Under those circumstances, if I got my hand on the gun first, he'd be a dead ass.
Okay. And see, I think...
If that's the way it went down, yes.
And, you know, I think any black guy, if you put him in that situation and ask them that same question, they're going to say the same thing. And
also, you got to forget that there's two guys there. So that cop doesn't know. If he's tussling with one, he doesn't know what the other one is doing.
Is up to or going to be eventually
right.
doing.
So
is he going to join
he
in?
He could have been faced with a situation where he had two people assaulting
him. Well, I can guarantee you this. We all would be scared in that situation.
Yeah.
And I think that is justifiable cause to use deadly force.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm just, you know, and they talk about you ended this kid's life. You know, he's dead. He's gone. It could have been the other way around. That's what I'm thinking. You know, so as soon as this altercation happens, I'm thinking I'm not dying.
Well, again,
today, I'm going to kill somebody before I die.
If you're a cop and you give a lawful order instruction to someone, and you know that they know that you're armed and you have the authority of that badge and gun, and they're going to still defy you and they're going to still challenge you maybe even verbally or physically, you have to start thinking, maybe he has something to back up that attitude he's displaying.
Absolutely.
So naturally, you're going to be hypervigilant, because there should be some kind of respect there, or maybe in a little intimidation, that when a cop tells you to do something, man, he's got a gun on his hip. Yeah, if it's lawful, you go ahead and do it. Even if it's not lawful, you might want to do it anyway and talk to a lawyer or somebody after the fact, because you can be right and be dead right.
If I happen to get into an altercation with somebody on the street, I automatically make the assumption. If I'm out and something happens, I automatically make the assumption that they have a weapon.
Yeah, you have
or
to.
Or something.
You have to.
I assume that. Mm-hmm. And I also, you know, I'm afraid that they're going to try to do something to me, and that they have something, you know, that gives them the ability to do something to me. I just have to assume that.
Yo, I used to date a lady years ago, and she had a cousin, one of the first female cops. She said that she only lasted for a couple of years because she was afraid that something's going to happen and she's going to have to shoot
right.
one of those
thugs,
those, one of her people. And she said that she just didn't want to be put in that position. But she said it happens all the time that they act in a way that make you think that they're armed because they don't
and
show
dangerous.
Any fear and they don't show any respect. And so, and you're there and you're surrounded and you automatically, you want to protect yourself and you want to go home. So she said that she just couldn't take it. She didn't want to be put in that position where she would have to shoot one of those guys.
Well, it's been kind of quiet out in Ferguson. I mean, have you heard anything in the news lately about what's going on?
No, and that's what should have happened in the first place, because we don't really know what happened. They should have given the authorities a chance to gather the evidence instead of going out there and doing what they did. You know, I thought we had come a little farther than that, in realizing that rioting and burning and looting, you know, the consequences down the road in that community is going to be tragic.
Well, you're taking steps backwards, because now you have to rebuild.
Well, if they rebuild, because I think most of those businesses are owned by white people, do you really think they're going to rebuild? I don't,
in that community.
Absolutely.
I don't think
they're going to stay
result,
there.
And then we talk about food deserts. Well, this is the type of behavior that leads to that.
Absolutely.
You know, whether it's a food desert
Absolutely.
Or a gas desert or a convenience store desert,
mm-hmm.
nobody wants to continue to run a business in these communities if they know every 2, 3, 4, 5 years that's going to happen.
Right.
And along with the fact that on a regular basis you're being robbed.
Yeah. And then if something happens to one of those hoodlums, that the community is up in arms and blaming the police, but taking it out on you, the business owner, or whoever, and destroying your livelihood. It's putting myself in that place, even if I, being a black man, if I owned a store, that situation, I don't think I would rebuild in that location. I don't think I would do it.
No, I wouldn't rebuild. And if I was a black man in that situation, I owned, let's say, for example, a convenience store there, I sure as hell wouldn't work there.
No.
I wouldn't, because statistics tell me that chances are somebody's going to come in and commit a crime against me.
Yeah, Big Mike.
You know,
come
so,
in and take him what he wants.
Right, so I wouldn't want to be in that situation.
But you notice that it was a big splash. The poverty pimps and the rabble rousers came in and they got their 15 minutes of FaceTime on the news and they tried to raise money and they tried to agitate and get the voter registration that should have been taken care of anyway.
Right.
And now, where are they?
Well, that tells me a lot about the community of Ferguson if only 20% of the people voted in the last election.
There's 60% of the population and only, 20%?
That immediately sends a signal to me that Ferguson is not a place that you want to be in. Ferguson is not a place that is probably conducive to raising a family or
That's
even
right.
operating and running a business. And Ferguson, to me, just seems to be another example of a terrible community.
Well, I think what it is populated by a lot of people who are using a social safety net. They're not really getting decent educations. They're definitely not registering to vote. And
right.
determining their own political future.
Right.
We know they're not doing that. So that goes back to what kind of education have they had and what kind of family structure do they have that they are willing to subsist or get by in a situation where they are the majority and could have the political clout to determine their own destiny.
Well, two things say a lot about a community: how they turn out to vote and how they vote. And I think we get a clear picture about Ferguson when we look at those two things.
At this point, I don't know who's to blame. I'd be like most situations. I think there's enough blame to go around with the cop. He might have overreacted, and Big Mike, who was in thug mode for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But the big losers is going to be that community, because I think it's going to go downhill real fast.
Well, at this point, I guess we just sit back and wait for the court case to begin and wait for the facts to be presented, and let's see what happens.
Yeah, but regardless of whether that officer is charged and prosecuted and jailed or whatever, those people have destroyed their own community.
And I don't think the community would turn itself around as a result of what happened. So yeah. Big Mike dying and all this stuff will be in vain.
Right. That's a heck of a legacy that your death caused, the death of your community.
Life goes on, even in Ferguson.
Yeah. Give us some thought, and together, perhaps we can all ensure our country's future history and have it be something we can be proud of.